Vous êtes sur Art District Radio et c'est l'heure de retrouver Luc Seabright dans Jazz Interview pour une rencontre en anglais avec un artiste de jazz. Passez un très bon moment sur Art District.
Hi everybody, my name is Luke Seabright and you're listening to our jazz interview program on Art District Radio. And today I have on the phone with me bass player Reggie Washington. Reggie will be performing two nights at the Sunset in Paris on the 8th and 9th of May at 9 p.m. every night. And he will be presenting his latest album, which is called Rainbow Shadow Volume 2. Which was released just in December of last year. Hey Reggie, how's it going?
All right, pretty good. Let me kind of update you just a moment. For the concert at Sunset Sunside, I'm doing another project which was supposed to be before Rainbow Shadow, but because of the death of Jeff, I switched them around. I'm doing my jazz quartet for 2 days, and we're also recording in Marseille. So it's not going to be the Rainbow Shadow project.
Okay.
That's going to be running anyway. But you know, this one is my jazz quartet project.
Okay, awesome. All right, noted. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the project that you're going to be bringing to the Sunset then? And if you could introduce the musicians you'll be performing with?
Ah, yeah, great. Okay. It's with quotes on it, jazz quartet. I'm going to be playing a lot of music that, you know, I have some stuff from my first CD. A few other tunes from friends and mentors and whatnot that are just rearrangements of jazz tunes. And I want to play more acoustic bass. So I'm arranging these songs to accommodate the acoustic bass. So it'll be more than 60% of the gig will be on the acoustic bass. This is what I'm trying to do. Yeah. It's something that I've wanted to do for a while. Play more acoustic bass and get that voice a little bit louder.
Cool.
Than it has been compared to the electric.
Yeah. Who will be by your side on the bandstand?
Oh man. Okay. I have my longtime friend from Roy Hargrove and RH Factor days, Bobby Ray Sparks.
Yeah.
He's going to be playing a myriad of keyboards and whatnot, but mainly acoustic piano and Moog and whatnot. I also have Fabrice Alman. He's a tennis sax player from Belgium that I've been working with for the past 8 to 10 years, and which he's a phenomenal player, and I'm really glad that he's coming out with us. And on drums, I got EJ Strickland. Who I've checked out over the years, from him becoming a young lion, and now he's blossomed into a really excellent musician and band leader, you know, from the drum chair. It's really amazing. You know, so it's just quartet, and I'm trying to keep it small.
Awesome. And so yeah, you're going to be focusing on, well, you're going to be playing a lot of acoustic bass. Is that something that's relatively new for you? I mean, have you done a lot of projects using mostly bass, or is this sort of like a new something you're exploring now?
No, it's not really new. It's reinventing the old, because I was playing acoustic before with Bradford Marsalis and Buckshot LaFunk.
Yeah.
Trying to get back to playing it again, and it with Roy Hargrove and RH Factor. For a minute I was playing acoustic bass, and then it just became crazy in the middle of a very loud stage. I was also playing acoustic bass with Steve Coleman. After like 5 or 6 albums, I said, man, I want to play just acoustic bass.
Cool.
Let's play acoustic bass. So, you know, so it's just I'm trying to make this more evident, because a lot of people don't even know that I play acoustic bass. And then there's, you know, there are percentages that know, but I'm trying to play more of it, because it's a fun instrument to play, and that's what I really started. Before I played electric bass, I was playing acoustic bass.
Mm-hmm. You even started on cello, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, and then they moved me over to the bass section because they didn't have any bass players.
Okay.
And they promised me that they were going to move me back to the cello section and see what these folks did. So, you know, it's all history by now.
Okay. And so what's this recording project you mentioned in Marseille, if it's not too early to ask?
Yeah, it's this project. It's the quartet in particular.
Yep.
So instead of recording before we perform, I want to perform, get some kind of life to the music.
Yeah.
And then we go into the studio and record it, you know. You know, and I'm just taking an opportunity, because Bobby has been over here with Liz Wright, and I saw him after like, you know, 5 or 6, 7 years when I went and played with Roy and RH Factor in Japan. So we talked about wanting to get together and do some stuff. So I just picked this opportunity to get him. And EJ's been playing in my quartet, like jazz quartet project, for the past 5 or 6 years. So.
Yeah.
You know, so it's something reoccurring, but this is the time that I'm getting to record it, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Cool. And so yeah, let's talk about your last album, which was released in December, which is so Rainbow Shadow Volume 2, which is the second volume of a tribute to a sadly little-known sort of blues, funk, jazz, all-around guitarist, Jeff Lee Johnson, who sadly passed away in 2013. So I know your paths, you crossed paths several times throughout your respective careers, and including you recorded together on an album in 2012, Freedom. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of your personal and professional relationship with Jeff?
Yeah, you know, when he passed in 2013, there was this void, you know, and I could understand what was going on with him at the time when he passed, you know. But I won't even go there with that. The wonderful thing about this tribute is we're playing some music that people haven't heard.
Yeah.
That's what's really exciting about this. You know, he was a great composer, singer, killing guitarists. Like we were talking about, it sounded like Monk on guitar.
Mm.
And it's interesting. I had to think about that a moment. And it was a privilege to learn from this cat, because he instilled certain like musical ethics into me that stay with me to this day. It's just to play for the music, you know. Don't give too much, you know. Don't give too much. Don't give too little.
Just don't overdo things.
Yeah, the right thing and no bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and he was always playing, you know, he seemed to play the right stuff, you know, and not anything anything more. You know, so I started using that and seeing that in the way I look at music, and just playing for the good of the music.
Yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, it being a show or some grandstanding, you know, play the music, man, and let people feel, you know, whatever that is. And that's all, Jeff was trying to do anyway.
So that's interesting.
I'm just continuing that on.
Yeah.
And it seems like people are feeling this, and I'm happy with that, because it's what's needed now. Something, you know, music with some kind of substance, something that's going to touch folks' souls, man.
Yeah.
That's going to wake people up.
Yeah.
Because it's there are a lot of sleeping folk, man, and it's dangerous. So I'm hoping that, you know, I know through the power of music, man, you can touch a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, of course you can. I'm thinking about this now. Yeah, monk on the guitar. It's an interesting. It's true. I mean, I hadn't heard that, but now you mention it, it's true. It does make some kind of sense. He could be very. He made a great use of space. He could be very economical, but kind of like playing, as you mentioned, the right note at the right time. He could also be completely virtuosic in his playing. So, okay, that's an interesting comparison. And so when did you meet Jeff?
I met Jeff in like 1986. I was working with, I had finished working with Ronald Shannon Jackson in the Decoding Society.
Of course, yeah.
And Jeff got in the band after I left. And Eric Person, saxophone player in the band, told me about this guy who was a beast on the guitar. So I said, man, you got to come down. So I came to a gig in New York and saw him. And from that moment, I was a fan. And this cat is out of control. So I didn't see him that much. But then when the new CD came out, the first one, Blue, you know, I was a fan and happened to know the guy who was doing these tunes, and because he's amazing, it stands up to everybody, you know. But unfortunately, he was one of the guys who fell through the cracks.
Yeah,
you know, and plus he's you gotta love him or you gotta understand. You know, people are different.
Yeah,
so to speak.
Blue, yeah. You know, so Blue was his first album, right? I think it was 96, something like that.
Yeah, it was man, that was really eye opening for me.
Yeah,
you know, because he's really, really prolific, and a lot of, you know, the subject matter of the tunes, you know, and there some of the stuff. If you listen to it now, it's timely. That's what I was doing with a few of the tunes on volume two, like Emmett Till.
Mm.
It speaks to now. We have a few things of the tunes here. Silence, No Secret.
Yeah,
the lyrics, they speak of what's happening.
Yeah, because he was a great lyricist too. Like
His sister, who I know, and Steph, we adore, you know, Judy David and Joanne Johnson.
Yeah,
they were let me see, his mom, I believe, was a librarian, so he hung out in the library.
Cool.
And he was very, very open to reading, so he got a whole bunch. And you can hear it. You can hear it in the lyricism. It's amazing.
And so Volume 2 was released last year, and it follows on the heels of Volume 1, which was released in 2015, so about 2 years after his passing. Did you choose to explore a slightly different side of his legacy in the second volume? Or was it just sort of a continuation of the same thing?
Actually, it was for me. It was a continuation because I had just taken a bunch of songs that I liked, just on the criteria of what I liked. Because I hadn't really broken into the like 14 and 15 CD discography that he has. You know, it's endless. Well, it's not, but. That's the way it felt once you start getting into tunes that are happening. Because I was also writing the lyrics and then sending it to his sister for her to proofread to make sure I was correct in what I was hearing. And it's a huge, huge discography, man, and of tunes, and they're saying so much. So all I did was just, I was continuing to record the tunes that I liked.
Yeah,
and I could do a three.
Oh, please do.
I'm gonna wait on that because two, I really enjoy. It was a, yes, it's a continuation, but the group became, you know, we became a band with Marvin Sewell on guitar and Patrick Dorsey on drums and my man DJ Grasshopper
on the turntables.
Turntables. Yeah, he is the sounds and essence of Jeff.
Yeah,
you know, he's using the voice, guitar licks. There's a few other things that we use. We use crows and corbeau and the sounds of birds.
No, he adds a fantastic textural element to the two albums. And that core of musicians that you mentioned, they are on both albums, plus different special guests on the two albums, right?
It was
important for you, presumably, to keep those same people on those two projects, right?
Yeah, well, Pat was the last drummer to be in his trio.
Okay.
Oh, hold on one second. I got little children coming in. Okay.
Never.
All right. Hold on one second. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. What the thing was? Patrick was the last drummer to play in the trio. Jeff was touring with, along with Johannes Tona. Grasshopper was in my Music of a Phrase project, which Jeff was in. And we had, it was really great. And he learned a whole bunch from him. He learned how to be like an accompanist, not a sideshow. A lot of times DJs are put on the stage just, and the DJ.
Yeah.
And then he does a little thing here and there, and then that's it. So I wanted him to become like a keyboard player.
Yeah,
you know, and textually blend in, help.
Yeah.
Be, you know, you got to know about the form of the tunes and stuff, and he started to like really explode. It was wonderful to see that he was really understanding the concept of comping and accompaniment within the confines of the turntable, I was giving him everything of whatever so he could just sample a guitar part, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it works out in a strangely weird way, and you know, he learned it from Jeff. Marvin Sewell has been an admirer of Jeff for a number of years since he's been familiar with his work, and they've gotten together and talked. They've done guitar duo. You know, and he plays. They both play the obscure instruments like dobros and sitars and steel string guitars. You know, so they were. It was a natural thing for me to ask Marvin to do the project.
Well, it's a really wonderful project. Like the two albums are, they complement each other extremely well, and they're really worth listening to, especially for anyone who doesn't know the work of Jeff. It's a great way to discover his music, and also I encourage everyone to check him out as an artist. Check out his discography, and unfortunately we need to wrap it up there, Reggie, but it's been a real okay. pleasure talking to you, and enjoy your concert in Paris.
And I'm hoping everybody can come out to see this, because you'll be there for the incubus, the beginning of a project, man. So come out and share, and we'll even probably put your name on the CD and stuff.
Cool, awesome. Well, thanks so much, Reggie. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Once again, that was Reggie Washington. He has two concerts coming up at the Sunset in Paris on the 8th and 9th of May. You'll get a chance to hear him on bass and acoustic on double bass. Write those dates down in your calendar. It's going to be two fantastic nights. Thanks so much, Reggie. Good luck. And my name's Luke Seabright. That was our jazz interview program. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
C'était Jazz Interview avec Luke Seabright. Retrouvez tous nos podcasts sur notre site internet artdistrict-radio.com. Très belle journée à notre écoute.